time for the Friday newscap and some voices from the news this week.
Enough, enough. When will we no longer be willing to allow one senator to jeopardize the reputation of each and every one of us, of the Senate, of the entire institution, because we know this person through their tweets has been actively enabling and supporting white supremacist replacement theory.
This is the equivalent of a legislative execution. There is no greater punishment we as a body can impose. That's why due process and ethics process and investigation, something is so critical. Because if we just forego that, we are no better than a mob.
On behalf of the good people of Legislative District 6, that the thousands of constituents that I represent and Representative Barton represents, that we have good people in our district that don't agree with the vitriol and the tweets that went out this past weekend that further hurt the families of those victims that were lost over this past weekend.
Since the announcement, since the leak of the Supreme Court, we have had a number of rallies and protests and marches throughout the state where people are turning out in the thousands.
And with us to talk about the latest with State Senator Wendy Rogers, a petition push to protect abortion and other reproductive rights in Arizona, and more, our Chad Campbell of Strategy 360. Chad, welcome back.
Thank you.
Marcus Dellartino of First Strategic. Marcus.
Great to be
nice
here.
Nice to see you. Nice to see your tie.
I got dressed up just for you. Good. And Chad, obviously.
Of course. Chad, I'm going to give you a crack at Wendy Rogers first. Should I phrase it that way? Sorry.
Sure. Yeah, lucky me.
But so when it comes down to vitriol and tweets, as Walt Blackman put it, what's the point? I mean, we talk about Wendy Rogers a lot. We're sort of joking about that before we started. At what point does this stop? If ever, and at what point do enough lawmakers really stand up, and whether expulsion or whatnot, why don't more people just say, really, really say this is wrong?
Well, I mean, here's the problem with this, and you heard Walt Blackman's comments about the good people of LD6, and she doesn't represent them, but she does. And so the voters have elected her, and so it's on the voters. And I know some of my Democratic friends are probably not going to be happy to hear me say this, but you can't expel somebody because they're a dirtbag. If that were the case, we'd be expelling people left and right all of the time. And you can't expel somebody if they haven't done anything that's illegal or unethical, especially without some type of investigation. So in this case, I understand why my Democratic friends did what they did. But I think the ethics investigation is the way to go to see what, if anything, was broken in terms of Senate rules or any laws. But if you go down a very slippery slope, if you let legislators start to expel other legislators because of what they're saying, yeah, and that's problematic. And again, next thing you know, next year, Republicans will be expelling Democrats because they've talked about critical race theory. Or you go down the other road. And this is a very dangerous path to go down. It's up to the vote. Unless Wendy Rogers has done something that's against Senate rules or illegal, you know, criminal in nature, okay, it's up to the voters to expel her. And they need to step up and expel her because she has no business being in office. None.
So, Marcus, as far as the legislature goes, she was censured once before. They could censure her again. What sort of impact does that have in any practical way?
You know, practically speaking, I don't think it has a huge effect. But I did want to go back to, you know, something that Chad was talking about, and I noticed in your voices this week, one of them was J.D. Mesnard, who, if your listeners will recall, was the Speaker of the House when we expelled Don Shooter. So if somebody knows about the process, it's him. And I couldn't agree with his words more, which is if we do not do an investigation, we are nothing better than a mob mentality. And that's very true. And I think that the voters do have to have some sort of consequences here, which is, you know, elections have consequences, right? And voters need to understand that there are consequences to those decisions. But from a censure standpoint, they could censure her again. You know, really, at the end of the day, it's effective for putting on a mail piece. She's been censured twice. But other than practically speaking, very little.
I would just add this too. I mean, I do think that the Senate leadership, I think that the Senate president should maybe remove her from committees, for instance. That takes it a step further, just like you saw with Marjorie Taylor Greene in D.C. You can do things to punish her that do have consequences, but expulsion, again, is a big step, and it's a slippery slope. And Marcus, just to your point too, you know, people, I think, maybe forgotten. I had to expel one of my own members when I was the minority leader. We had to get Daniel Patterson out of there for a variety of reasons. But you know what we did? We went through an ethics investigation. We hired an outside counsel to investigate it. We went through a process, and ultimately we came to the conclusion that you had to be out of this chamber, and he resigned, but we were going down that road. But we did it with a full investigation.
Interesting side note. He resigned. He left town. He moved to Nevada, if I remember correctly, and tried to run for public office once again.
He's running right now, actually.
There you go.
So, Marcus, I'm curious about the investigation in this case because, you know, you referenced the Daniel Patterson case. That was a legal issue. There was stuff to try to find out. A lot of us remember the Scott Bungard case. There was a legal investigation there. In this case, she tweeted something. She's not denying she tweeted it. She says it's taken out of context, but Senator Rogers has not explained what the context was. Like, this does not seem like it would be a terribly lengthy investigation.
Probably not, but can I? I'm going to go down a rabbit hole. I can't believe I'm going to do this. I've got this bizarre theory that I think in this investigation, this so-called investigation, it may come to light that she does not actually control her Twitter account, that somebody else has access to it and occasionally sends out tweets on her behalf.
Is his name Donald Trump by any chance?
Irrelevant.
That's the question of the day.
It's irrelevant to the point. But I would find it interesting, and many politicians do this, governors, you know, certainly the president of the United States is not, well, one guy did, but, you know, the current president of the United States is not sending out his own tweets. And I think that might be an interesting discovery if it were to come to light.
So, Chad, let's say that the investigation happens, whether or not Senator Rogers controls her own Twitter account or has the password or whatever. What are some of the options for the ethics committee here? You mentioned that expulsion is maybe a road too far here, but what should we expect for the ethics committee to do, assuming that she continues to not deny she said what she said and stands by it?
Yeah. And again, I'm not necessarily saying that expulsion is a road too far. I don't know. But you have to investigate it first is my point. But there has to be some type of clear cut, illegal action or something that goes against the standards of conduct or the rules of the Senate that justifies that expulsion. Because, I don't want to sound like a conspiracy theorist here or an alarmist, but the minute you let other legislators dictate who can serve in office because of their opinions, you are going down a very dangerous path. And that gives the majority party, whatever the majority party may be, the ability to hold captive minority members of the legislature. And you have to be very careful if you're going to take that step.
Well, the reality is if we were to do that, we'd have an entire legislation full of throwing members out.
Exactly.
And we would never do any bills.
That's exactly my point. Yep.
All you do is toss these guys.
Yep.
Marcus, let me go back briefly to when you mentioned J.D. Mesnard and Don Shooter, just because I think this is an interesting juxtaposition with what we're talking about, whether with Patterson or we're talking about currently with Rogers, is that was a fellow member who had accused Shooter in Ujanti Rita. Does that make a difference based on what Chad's saying, as far as expulsion is concerned?
Maybe a little bit, but I mean, the differences are sort of night and day. I mean, there was a full-scale investigation with attorneys and former U.S. attorneys and former investigators with a report that was about as, you know, thick as I am tall.
And you're pretty tall.
Right.
Kind of.
You know. I didn't say it was as thick as or as tall as Chad is. but I would say this is that it had photos, it had email evidence, it was exhaustive report. This has none of that. This is just, hey, you sent out a mean tweet. I don't happen to agree with the tweet now that I understand what it means. Now, I had to do some research. Yeah. And most people don't and have to have it explained to them. But once that's done, I think there needs to be a little bit more to it than just tossing her straight
out. Well, and even, I mean, again, not to dwell on the subject, but even To her opponent in the upcoming primary, Kelly Townsend. When I look at Kelly Townsend's Twitter feed, it is horrifying. It is full of lies. It is full of misinformation. During COVID, she tweeted out some of the worst things and most uncaring, heartless things about people who are dying from COVID that I could ever imagine in my life, but she probably shouldn't be expelled for it. But if you want to look at those tweet lines, I would tell you right now, Kelly Townsend is almost as bad as Wendy Rogers, and I feel sorry for those people in that district that have to deal with those two in a primary. So
the other thing we need to remember is that the primary election is right around the corner.
Yeah.
And so that's easy in a legislator's mind to say, why don't I just let the voters decide next month, as opposed to going through a month-long investigation and kicking a member out.
So, guys, the Senate Ethics Committee might have a little bit more work to do. Senator T.J. Shope this week also filed an ethics complaint against one of his colleagues, Senator Juan Mendez, basically for not showing up this year. He and his wife had a baby, and he is nervous about being at the Capitol because of the COVID situation. We talked a little bit about, you know, with the Don Shooter, Michelle Ujanti-Rita situation, one member with a complaint against another. Chad, does this maybe fall more into that category? Is there maybe more to look into in terms of what the rules should be in terms of how frequently a member has to actually be in the building?
I'm going to go back to what I said a minute ago. It's up to the voters to decide these types of things. If voters don't feel like their member is doing the work they should be doing, then they can elect somebody else. And in this case in particular, from what I know, Senator Mendez had gotten permission from Senate President Fan to not be at home or not be at the legislature because of the newborn child and COVID, everything else. So I have a hard time believing this call for this investigation is anything other than, well, you're going to investigate one of our members. We're going to investigate one of your members. And again, unless there's a clear cut illegal activity or a clear-cut type of break from Senate rules, you have to go down these things very carefully. But I just think this is more of a distraction attempt than anything else.
Marcus, is this the kind of thing that, again, voters should just figure out in the fall if this is okay with them?
Well, I think it goes back to what I just said, is that the timing is always going to play in the back of a legislator's mind. Why am I spending time on this, taking the responsibility for expelling this member when next month the voters get to decide whether they want to keep him or not, you know? And so I think ultimately that's where it's going to end up.
I hate to sound cynical in a conversation about politics, but Marcus, we have seen the legislature not really doing all that much recently. And, you know, they come in a couple days a week, they vote on a few bills, but otherwise it's a lot of behind the scenes budget talks. If we were in the thick of it when they had long committee agendas, long floor agendas, a lot of important issues coming forward, would we be talking about these things? Would they be talking about these things? Or is this kind of a matter of almost like looking for something to do?
The circumstances have changed so dramatically, you know, with COVID. Back then when we were hot and heavy and committee hearings, et cetera, I mean, COVID was still riding in the back of everybody's mind. Now we're over it. And so I think that that's put sort of a target on Mr. Mendez's back as far as why can't you show up over here at the legislature? It's all of what's the battlefield look at the time of the fight? And it's vastly different than it was months ago.
Chad, you have been in this position of, you know, having members kind of sitting around waiting for something to happen.
Well, as a Democrat, we did that a lot.
I was trying to be polite. Is this the time of year when lawmakers maybe have a little too much free time on their hands?
Yeah, I mean, I think it is. What's the old saying? Idle hands are the devil's work or whatever, right? So I do think they're kind of getting bored down there and they need to figure something out because you know, right now they're in gridlock and quite frankly, they're wasting everybody's time. And when that happens to this point, they start doing things that probably aren't in the best interest of the state.
Okay, that is Chad Campbell. Also, here's Marcus Dell'Artino with Mark Brody in Phoenix. I'm Steve Goldstein in the midst of the Friday newscap, which continues after this. It's the Friday newscap on KJZZ with Mark Brody in Phoenix. I'm Steve Goldstein. Our guests today are the dapper Marcus Dell'Artino of First Strategic and the muscular Chad Campbell of Strategies 360. Chad, let's start off with this this initiative push at this point, which is going to have a long way to go to get certain reproductive rights, including abortion, protected in Arizona if Roe v. Wade is in fact overturned. This is a late start. What does this effort mean to you, though, in terms of what the grassroots may feel about this issue in Arizona?
Yeah, I mean, I think it underscores the sense of urgency among the grassroots, among the folks and the demographics will be most affected by this. I think they're very, very concerned about the possibility of Roe v. Wade being overturned. I think when it comes to this ballot measure, this is a huge hill to climb, though. You're talking about this is a constitutional amendment. So we're talking about, you know, 500,000, 600,000 signatures at least probably to qualify.
Right.
And so that's a very, very big hill to climb. So I applaud these efforts, and I'm glad to see it's galvanizing the activists. I'm glad to see that people are rallying, and I think that this is going to be a huge issue when it comes to the election this year. But I do think that this is, if this fails, I want to make sure this energy is translated into the November elections. That's the key. And I worry about if this doesn't qualify, that then something kind of tapers off and we don't see the energy. And so it's incumbent on all of us to make sure that we direct these folks who are out there trying to collect signatures and trying to rally the community to focus that energy in November. Because I have a hard time believing, hate to be the naysayer, that they're going to qualify for the ballot at this point.
Well, Marcus, it's a valid point that Chad makes, though, but does it in some way for folks who feel like that on that side of the issue, is it going to get people focused enough? And if we see that there isn't even that much energy for it, will that give us some indications for November?
I don't think that the initiative process will have sway one way or the other on the energizing the Democratic base.
Okay.
I do think that the Supreme Court decision draft decision has done that all by itself. And so from that standpoint, I think it's irrelevant. I don't think they're going to qualify. I think it's too late. And by the way, the cost per signature, even though we don't calculate it that way anymore under state law, is astounding.
Yes. Yep.
And if you don't think that special interests influence public policy, let me throw some numbers at you. But anyway, that being said, it's a very expensive, very, very short timeline. I don't think they'll get the signatures. Now, that all being said, and we've already seen it in the polling, that this issue is now competing with jobs and the economy for number one. That being said, remember, the Supreme Court still has to make a decision and could be drastically different than what this draft showed. How does that draft decision then affect the momentum going into the November elections? And that's my question.
Chad, why do you think that it is that supporters decided to try to get on the ballot, as we've all talked about, an uphill climb this year, as opposed to really like taking some time and focusing on 2024?
Well, because I think it shows you the urgency of the situation. It shows you that people are deathly afraid of Roe v. Wade being overturned, as they should be. This would be a crisis of epic proportions for a lot of people in the community that wouldn't get access to the health care and the reproductive choices that they need. So this is a reaction that I understand that reaction. But again, it's just a very big hill to climb to get that many signatures this late in the game. And to my point earlier, I don't disagree with Marcus that it's not going to change energy around this issue for the Democrats. I just hope that those folks out there, though, that maybe spend the next 2 months trying to gather signatures and then they don't qualify, don't go home and not volunteer for a campaign and not get on the trail for a candidate when it comes November, because we need those people out there knocking on doors and talking to voters. And that's my point. I don't want to burn them out early and then not have them there 3-4 months from now.
Marcus, regardless of whether or not this gets on the ballot, do Republican lawmakers look at this and maybe take action of their own?
I mean, once the decision's final, and if there is, if in some form this returns the decision to the states, then yes. I mean, we have laws on the books as is, but I do think that we may need to go into some sort of special session, or maybe it'll be handled in a regular session to clear up some conflicts between a law that's been on the books for over 100 or
yeah,
close to 100
years,
yep.
Yeah,
versus something that we just did a few sessions ago.
Speaking of an issue that's already on the books, Marcus, what about a bill to ban day of voter registration in Arizona, day of election voter registration? As far as we know, unless we want to look back in the Arizona Constitution, that already is not...
You can't do it.
Yeah. So Mark asked about legislature not doing a whole lot. Do we just need sort of 2.0 laws now? Just reinforce it again. Do it.
I want to make sure that you're hearing me.
In case you missed it the first time, yes.
You know, I think that's part of it. I mean, the argument will always be something to the effect of, well, we won't always be in the majority, and maybe the Democratic Party takes over, and maybe there's a decision here in the courts or whatever it may be that these circumstances could exist. And we just want to make absolute sure it doesn't change. But the other fact of it is it also, I mean, let's be honest, motivates the Republican base, especially right now where we're seeing these election bills everywhere. And it's sort of a motivating piece for them.
Chad, we haven't seen much of the election-related legislation move at this point. This is one that has. What are you expecting to see on that one if, in fact, activity happens? We know that Speaker Bowers has tried to kill or at least move them away a little bit. Are you expecting a little revival of that in the next couple of weeks?
Yeah, I mean, I would assume so. And I'm sure some of the members down there are trying to leverage their position within the budget negotiations to push some of these election bills forward. You know, it's going to be a fast and furious finish once they actually come to some type of budget deal. When that will happen, who knows? And it remains to be seen if it's a Republican deal or if it's a bipartisan deal. But to Marx's point, I mean, a lot of these election bills, though, they are solely intended to motivate the Republican base. And they're solely intended, from my view at least, to continue to just feed into the fact that this election was stolen in 2020. And it's more about continuing to undermine the election process so that when 2022 rolls around and 2024 rolls around, they can make these outlandish claims once again that the election was stolen. Unless, of course, they win, then the election process will be fine all of a sudden. But that seems to be, I think, the bigger picture here. It's just chipping away at elections, and that's the scariest part about this whole thing.
Marcus, one other election-related issue in the news this week, and this is one maybe also that motivates the base, although I think a lot of folks on both sides of the aisle would question it, which is the chair of the state Republican Party, Kelly Ward, has taken her lawsuit to try to end early voting to Mojave County. I guess if you want to watch this hearing, you better get in the car.
Yeah, that's the seems to be a prevailing new trick, especially by one specific attorney, where we're doing a little court shopping, and it just happened in a case right before this one. I'm not the best person to talk to about this because I have used early voting to Republican success for 30 years, and even I think Chad will concede that Republicans have been disgustingly effective at using early balloting. And so I think getting rid of it is probably the most short-term worst decision we could possibly do. But that being said, I am clearly in the minority of my party. They think that there should only be, you know, one day of voting. And I tell you, I think that we will those consequences of that decision will be extremely painful for the Republican Party.
Chad, is this the kind of issue? I mean, we saw that Democrats used early voting pretty effectively last time, and what, something like 90% of Arizonans voted early in the last election. Is this the kind of election issue that might get folks worked up enough to vote a particular way come November?
Yeah, possibly. But, you know, prior to Donald Trump and to Marx's point, Republicans used mail-in balloting and early voting much more effectively than Democrats did. I go to the senior parts of the valley here, the state. Seniors use mail to vote. Kelly Ward is so short-sighted. I mean, she's the very definition of a person who she's latched on. She's the dog who caught the bumper or whatever and has no idea what to do with the car now in terms of her election work. And so I don't know what her endgame is. I don't think she knows her endgame. She's just trying to gin up the base. But if this were to pass, this would have, I mean, severe consequences for how people vote, who votes, but it wouldn't just be Democrats. Again, until Donald Trump came along and started talking about election fraud and how you couldn't trust the election process, Republicans used early voting much more effectively than Democrats did in this state. And this is once again a situation where you've seen Donald Trump flip the Republican Party on its head and turn it against something that it was for decades before he came along.
Marcus, I want to use our last 2 minutes because Chad invoked the name of Donald Trump. So let's talk about the possibility. And to use something Marco always likes to bring up, Chad, we will have you comment on Republican politics in just a second. Marcus, let's talk about the possibility that Donald Trump, CNN's reporting now, he's not sure who he wants to endorse. He was big on Blake Masters because of his closeness with Peter Thiel. How big a difference in this sort of weird race we're seeing with Brnovich and Lehman and McGuire and the aforementioned Blake Masters, how much will the Trump endorsement matter here?
Well, I think that, you know, the Pennsylvania election, if nothing else, and certainly North Carolina, show us that it is a factor. It's not the factor. Okay. Everybody wants to say that the endorsement is the golden bullet or the, you know, the ace in the hole, the one thing that you absolutely need. And the evidence just from this week shows you that that's not the case. It is an important factor. It is not the one and only factor.
Well, Chad, we look at the governor's race. It certainly seems like, to a point at least, his closeness with Carrie Lake has helped her. Now, of course, we're going to see if she can bump up above where she is. But the Senate race is a little bit different. He's obviously gone after Brnovich. As I mentioned, there's some closeness between he and Blake Masters' benefactor. But
yeah.
So in this case, we're not even really sure at this point. There's so many undecided.
Yeah, and I think, you know, Masters was probably the de facto candidate we all thought Trump was going to endorse, right? I think Lehman has made a push, though. And Lehman's talking more like Trump now. He's being more over the top. He's now calling people. He's putting little insult type of names in front of people's actual names. Now I noticed on his Twitter feed. So he's probably caught Trump's attention with him emulating Trump. I think the one person we know he's not going to endorse is Mark Brnovich. But I think to Mark's point, I don't know that it matters necessarily in some of these races. And I think Matt Salmon is regretting that he tried to become a MAGA person at the beginning of his campaign nowadays. That's the one thing I haven't learned.
Yeah. Chad Campbell, Strategies 360. Marcus Dell'Artino for Strategic. I was hoping I could ask you at the end how the Suns are going to do the next round, but they lost. So we can't talk about that.
Yes. Too soon.
Guys, great to see you as always. Thanks.
Great. Thank you.